All right, ready to dive deep. This time, we're heading into modern India, a fascinating mix of articles, economic reports, even historical accounts you've given us.
Quite the blend.
It seems like you're really trying to grasp India's climb as a global power, especially since 1991.
Definitely a key period.
Big meeting coming up, perhaps.
It certainly appears so. To understand India's place today, we need a bit of time travel.
Back to the future.
Not too far, just enough to see how the seeds for this powerhouse were planted.
Love it. So let's set the stage. Centuries of British rule in India, that's the backdrop, right? But how did a trading company, the East India Company, end up governing a whole nation?
Well, at first, profit was the sole focus. That spice trade was incredibly lucrative.
Right, spice route, all that.
Exactly. But governing, they soon learned, was crucial to protect those profits.
Had to maintain order.
Think of Warren Hastings, the first governor general. Not just some merchant. He was establishing laws, things like the regulating acts, trying to brook that massive company under control.
It's wild, isn't it? For a while, Parliament was essentially trying to regulate a company, not a colony.
A unique situation.
But that did change eventually, right?
Absolutely. The 1857 revolt was a turning point. More than just a rebellion, it exposed the weaknesses of company rule.
I see.
Forced the British crown to take direct control. That's how the British Raj was born. That shift from company to crown still resonates in India's systems today.
Fascinating. Okay, so the Raj sets the stage for modern India. But the road to independence wasn't exactly smooth sailing, was it? These iconic figures, Gandhi advocating nonviolent resistance, Churchill defending the empire.
It was a clash of ideologies for sure.
A real battle of wills.
Gandhi's philosophy, rooted in ancient Indian ideas, like Ashoka's embrace of nonviolence, challenged colonial thinking at its core.
And the partition, the creation of Pakistan.
A direct consequence of unresolved tensions and political maneuvering.
A scar that's still felt today.
Indeed. And during all this, you have groups like the Hindu Mahasabha gaining prominence.
Advocating for a Hindu-centric India.
Exactly. Their stance on separate electorates for Muslims certainly added fuel to the fire.
A very complex period.
Understanding these historical fault lines is key to grasping modern India, the post-independence landscape dominated by the Congress Party.
But you also had the Janata Party briefly emerging, figures like Indira Gandhi. It was a constant power struggle.
Definitely.
So by 1991, we have an India that's navigated colonial rule, a tumultuous independence, decades of internal political shifts. That's a lot to carry onto the world stage, wouldn't you say?
You're absolutely right. And yet, this is where the story gets truly captivating. Despite these challenges, India in 1991 was poised for a transformation, an economic leap that would redefine its global standing.
So 1991, that's when our deep dive really kicks into gear. What was it about this specific year that marked such a turning point for India?
1991 was the year India embraced economic liberalization.
Good.
Before that, a closed economy model. Heavy government control, regulations, barriers to trade.
Right.
But things were changing, both within India and globally.
What kind of changes? What prompted this shift towards liberalization?
Well, for one, India was facing a balance of payments crisis, running out of foreign exchange reserves. The government had to act.
I see.
But there was also this growing realization the old economic model wasn't working. Other nations were experiencing rapid growth. India needed to catch up.
Makes sense. So how did liberalization actually play out? What changed on the ground?
It was a dramatic overhaul. Tariffs reduced, doors opened to foreign investment, a wave of deregulation swept across industries.
Well,
the idea, make the Indian market more competitive, attract foreign capital, ultimately boost economic growth.
Ambitious. And did it work? What was the overall impact of these reforms?
For the most part, yes. India's economy started growing at a much faster pace.
That's great.
New industries emerged, particularly in services, IT, telecommunications. Massive growth. Created jobs, brought in wealth, really helped elevate India's standing in the global economy.
That's a remarkable turnaround. But I imagine there were also some downsides to such rapid change. Was everyone benefiting from this economic boom?
Necessarily, like any major shift, winners and losers. Some industries struggled to adapt to the new competition.
Right.
And concerns about rising inequality, the benefits of growth weren't always distributed evenly.
Makes sense. So you have this economic engine revving up, but how did that translate into India's position on the world stage?
That's where it gets really interesting. India started asserting itself more in international affairs.
Okay.
We see them becoming more active in multilateral organizations, pushing for reforms, shaping global agendas. Their diplomatic strategies become more sophisticated. Their economic clout starts translating into real influence.
Well, I remember reading about India's Look East policy. Was that around this time?
Exactly right. The Look East policy was all about strengthening ties with Southeast Asian countries. Strategic positioning, building alliances and partnerships, and not just Southeast Asia, India started forging stronger relationships with countries in Africa, the Middle East, even Latin America. Their global footprint expanding rapidly.
It sounds like a carefully orchestrated strategy, leveraging economic power to build influence and forge new alliances. But I imagine India's internal politics also played a role in shaping their global approach.
Absolutely. India's domestic politics are never far from the surface, even in international dealings. And one of the most significant developments we've seen in recent decades is the rise of Hindu nationalism.
Right.
Particularly the Bharatiya Janata Party, or BJP.
Yeah, BJP. They've become a dominant force in Indian politics. How has their ideology shaped India's foreign policy?
Well, there's definitely a greater emphasis on projecting India's Hindu identity, on celebrating its ancient cultural heritage.
Interesting.
This is evident in their cultural diplomacy, promoting things like yoga and Ayurveda. We also see it in their approach to certain international issues.
Can you give us an example? How has the BJP's approach differed from previous governments?
Take their stance on Pakistan. The BJP has taken a much harder line, less willing to engage in dialogue, more focused on security and countering terrorism.
That's a pretty significant shift. How has that been received internationally?
It's a mixed bag, honestly. Some countries sympathize with India's security concerns. Others are worried about the potential for escalation. The BJP's approach has certainly created some tension in the region.
So we have this complex interplay of economic power, diplomatic maneuvering, and political ideology all shaping India's global trajectory. But it feels like there's a bigger picture here, something about the global landscape itself that's shifting.
You're picking up on something crucial. India's rise isn't happening in a vacuum. We're seeing a resurgence of nationalism globally, a reaction to globalization, economic uncertainty, anxieties about cultural identity. This trend is reshaping the entire geopolitical landscape.
So India's not alone in this. They're part of a larger global wave.
Exactly. And this wave of nationalism is creating new alliances, new conflicts. It's a very dynamic and, frankly, unpredictable world that India is trying to navigate.
Okay, let's take a step back. We've covered a lot of ground here, from economic liberalization to the rise of the BJP, all within this larger context of global shifts. Where does this leave India today? What's their current standing in the world?
India is undoubtedly a rising power. Their economy is growing, their military is becoming more powerful, and their influence is expanding.
Sounds promising.
But they still face some pretty significant challenges. Poverty, inequality, environmental degradation, and they're doing all of this while navigating a very complex geopolitical environment.
So big ambitions, lots of potential, but also some serious obstacles to overcome. What does all this mean for, like you said, someone preparing for a high-level meeting about India's emergence?
It means that India is a country to watch, a country to engage with. They are a major player on the global stage, and their actions have repercussions far beyond their borders.
So pay attention to those diplomatic strategies, to those economic policies, and to those shifting political dynamics.
It sounds like India is a force to be reckoned with.
Absolutely. Their story is still unfolding, a story of resilience, transformation, and a nation striving to find its place in a rapidly changing world. And that's what makes it so fascinating to study.
That's a great point. But I think we need to go a bit deeper. We've talked about the big picture, but what about the specifics of India's global engagement? Things like trade relationships, military alliances, their role in international organizations.
You're right. It's not just about abstract concepts like rising power. It's about concrete actions, about real-world impact. So let's delve into those specifics and see how India is putting its power into play on the global stage.
All right, so we've got this big picture of India's rise, the economic boom, the political shifts, this global wave of nationalism. But let's get specific. How is this actually playing out in India's global engagement? Let's start with trade. We know they're a major player, but who are they trading with these days? Well, the U.S. is still a big factor, but things have really diversified, especially since that liberalization in 91.
Right.
China has become increasingly important, both for imports and exports. And there's a real push to strengthen ties with Southeast Asia through agreements like the Asian-India Free Trade Area.
So it sounds like spreading their bets, not putting all their eggs in one basket. What about Africa? I've heard that's becoming a bigger focus for India.
Absolutely. Africa offers valuable resources, energy resources especially, and a huge potential market for Indian goods and services. We're seeing lots of investment and diplomatic activity focused on building those relationships.
Okay, so trade is expanding, diversifying. But what about the military side of things? India has a pretty sizable military. They're a nuclear power. How does that factor into their global strategy?
It's a key element, no doubt. India's military capabilities are growing steadily. They're modernizing their forces, investing in new technologies, and they're increasingly willing to project power beyond their borders.
Project Power. What does that actually look like?
Well, we've seen India participate in peacekeeping operations in places like Sri Lanka and Somalia. They've also conducted joint military exercises with countries like the US, Japan, and Australia, and they're taking a more active role in maritime security in the Indian Ocean region.
So they're not just sitting back defending their own territory. They're taking a more proactive, even assertive stance. Does that mean they're forming military alliances? Who are they aligning themselves with?
Not necessarily formal alliances. India has historically been hesitant about those, preferring to maintain strategic autonomy, you know. But they're definitely building closer partnerships with certain countries.
Like who? Who are India's key military partners?
The U.S. is definitely a key partner. Lots of cooperation on defense technology and intelligence sharing. They also have strong ties with Russia going back to the Cold War era. And then there's the growing relationship with countries like Japan and Australia, driven by shared concerns about China's growing influence.
So it's a complex web of relationships, shifting and evolving with the geopolitical winds. What about their involvement in international organizations, the UN, the G20, the BRICS group? How is India using those platforms?
They're using them to assert themselves, to push for reforms, to shape global agendas. They've been vocal about wanting a permanent seat on the UN Security Council, reflecting their growing economic and military clout. And they're active in organizations like the World Trade Organization, pushing for fairer trade rules.
It sounds like they're not content to just sit on the sidelines. They're actively trying to shape the global order to better reflect their interests.
Exactly. And it's not just about hard power, about military might and economic influence. India is also leveraging its rich and diverse culture as a form of soft power.
Right, things like Bollywood, yoga, Indian cuisine, those have become global phenomena.
Exactly. These cultural exports are shaping perceptions of India, creating a more favorable image, and fostering connections that go beyond politics and economics.
So bringing it all back to our listener who's diving deep into India's global emergence, what are the key takeaways here? What should they be paying attention to as they prep for that big meeting?
Well, first and foremost, don't underestimate India. They're ambitious, they're assertive, and they're not afraid to challenge the status quo. They're a major player on the world stage, and their actions have real consequences.
So watch their moves carefully. Anything else?
Keep a close eye on domestic politics because those internal dynamics will inevitably shape their foreign policy. The rise of Hindu nationalism under the BJP is a significant development that's influencing how India engages with the world.
So ideology matters. It's not just about pragmatism and national interest. What else should our listener be aware of?
Focus on their economic growth. That economic power is translating into greater influence on the global stage. They're using it to forge new partnerships, secure resources, expand their footprint.
So track those trade deals, investments, infrastructure projects, all signs of India's growing influence. Any final thoughts?
Don't forget about the power of India's culture. That soft power is a real asset, shaping global perceptions and building bridges. It's a reminder that India's story isn't just about power and politics. It's also a story of vibrant culture, ancient wisdom, a unique perspective on the world.
That's a great point. It's about understanding India in all its complexity. So for our listener, as you delve into the details of India's global emergence, remember to look beyond the headlines, consider the cultural nuances, and never underestimate the power of this rising giant.
Well said. India's story is still being written, and it's a story worth paying attention to.
This has been The Deep Dive, and we've just scratched the surface of India's fascinating journey. But hopefully, we've given you some valuable insights to take with you. Thanks for joining us, and keep diving deep into the world around you.